Willy Strieber, the guy in the hotel room is telling us we need the help of intelligent machines. We've just about reached the limits of what the human brain can do. We'll need to have these supercomputers, maybe talking about quantum computers, which I know you've read a lot of David Deutsch, and I have. We're getting pretty close to quantum computers. He also mentions, this guy in the hotel room, he says a couple of things about gas, using gas for memory retention in computers that were,
yes.
It was not capable, possible back then, but it's possible now.
Well, I thought it was ridiculous. It was like something out of some kind of cheap science fiction book. And it interested me because it was one of the things that when I first really looked over this after I had finished transcribing it. In fact, to be honest with you, when I was transcribing this, I thought to myself, why don't I just leave this out? This is so stupid. It makes the whole thing look ridiculous, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm this part of it I dreamed up, but it didn't. That's not true. I didn't dream it up. He did say it. And so I decided, well, you know, if I'm going to have any integrity at all in this life, I can't do a thing like that. This is what I think he said. It goes in. And so it went in. Now, at the time, he said things like gas is an important component to consider in the construction of intelligent machines. He said nitrous oxide will bear memory. And I thought to myself at the time that it's laughing gas. So I thought, is it some sort of eccentric joke that he's trying to pull on me? And yet, in 2005, there was an announcement that this very gas could be used as a method of retaining super dense memory. And which was amazing to me that he could have been right about something like that, and that was one of the things that got me on the road to deciding that it was time to publish this book on a larger scale, because I can say with authority, this man did say this in 2000, at least in 2002, because that's when it was physically published, not as a download that could be changed, but physical publication. He actually said it to me in 1998, but I can prove 2002. It's sitting there, black and white. There was a very specific discovery announced in 2005 that reoxidized nitrous oxide could be used as a gate dielectric for charge-trapping non-volatile memory. He was right, in other words. Now, you asked the question before we came back together, was he from the future? And I really thought that might be the case, because there were so many things in his that he said, like there's another thing he said. He said there's more than one universe. In 1998 or in 2002, that was scientific heresy. Ridiculous. I mean, there is one universe, one Big Bang, and it is expanding into an endless void. That was what was believed. A couple of years ago, a group of scientists who were analyzing the background radiation in the universe are saying that the condition of that radiation indicates that this universe has been touched from the outside by a super scale physical object at least four times in its history, that it has in fact collided with one or more other universes that are out there so far away that we've never even seen their light, that this enormous, amazing thing that we call the universe with its billions upon billions of galaxies is not alone, that there are others beyond the beyond that are out there. And this man knew this and stated it in 1998. Amazing. Awesome.
Of course, you look at something like that, you try to get your head around the size of this universe, let alone the interaction with other universes, other larger universes, whether or not the universe contracts and expands over and over over vast amounts of time. That's all big stuff. And yet, the most profound stuff, at least from my reading of The Key, was very personal. It's about the soul, about what this guy is hoping that all of us aspire to do, what we are aspire to evolve into. There was a phrase that you used, that he used, that really struck a nerve with me, and it was about the harvesting of souls. And the reason it struck a nerve is because back in 1989, around the first time I interviewed you, I was working with a guy named Bob Lazar. And I know a lot of people have written off Bob Lazar as being completely phony, but he told me reluctantly back then, and we reported it back then, that one of the reports he had read at Area 51 said that these aliens or some of the visitors were here for the purpose of harvesting souls. He didn't want to say it because he felt it sounded ridiculous. But there's the phrase in your book, The Key.
That is correct. And I have to tell you, George, I think that Bob was right. And let me be specific. The Master of the Key said, I was asking him about the soul. He knew a lot about the soul, about what it is. And he said, for example, and let me divert for a second.
Sure.
There is no supernatural. There is only the natural world, some parts of which we understand and some parts of which we don't.
That makes perfect sense.
And the soul is part of the natural world that we do not yet understand, but we're actually not far from that. He then said, he mentioned that souls could be exploited, even killed. They could be executed. And I thought, and he said they may last forever, but that they could be exploited. And I thought, my God, he's telling me that something, some part of us, so precious that it has the potential to be eternal, could be somehow interrupted. It was terrifying. I said, how can they be exploited? And he said, material of souls is harvested used to make intelligent machines. An intelligent machine is a being without the potential to be free. In this sense, it is not alive. It must act as it acts. And human souls have been harvested for this purpose for thousands of years. And that is, I'm telling you, it struck such a chord with me because I saw things in my experience, not often, one or two times, I saw creatures that were unspeakably evil. They radiated it. Like one time my wife and I were out walking. We used to, when we lived in Texas, it was very hot there in the summer. We walk every day for an hour, religiously. We've done it for years, and it's one of the favorite parts of our day. You know, we have a nice conversation. But in Texas, we would wait until like 1 o'clock in the morning because you can't walk when it's so hot that you know you can fry an egg on your bald spot.
I can relate.
Yeah, you're in Las Vegas, so you know. Yeah. But that's a dry heat. I mean, in South Texas. And I know it's ridiculous to even say that to you, but in South Texas, when it's 100 degrees and 90% humidity,
oh yeah,
you don't walk, you wade. Anyway, we would wait until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, and we were coming back from our walk. One, it's a very safe, lovely part of town. It was not unsafe to walk at any hour there. Coming back from our walk, the little strip mall that we were just getting ready to walk across to get up to the condo we lived in, and standing in front of a drugstore in that strip mall, there was a man in an overcoat, and a wave of evil hit us, just hit us in the face, and we both stopped. And I said, "Ann," and he said, "Whitley." She said, "Whitley, don't move. He's evil." I said, "I know he's evil." He was, his back was even to us. He was doing something in through the door of the drugstore. And you could feel it. And you knew there was something really weird here. This was no ordinary human being. It's not a burglar, not a robber, not a mugger. This was something spiritually twisted. It was a spirit